We're going to take a quick look back at last week, and if you remember, we were focusing on being a disciple, right? You might recall the backwards bicycle is our illustration for how it can be really actually impossible to follow God without His grace, and we need some training, and you know, He's asking us to do things like, you know, in your anger, do not sin, and return an insult with a blessing, and all these kind of things that, you know, turn the handle to the left and was supposed to go to the right, and thankfully nobody got injured. Before I go any farther though, I have a gift for anybody who can stand up and Amy, would you mind taking the microphone to whoever volunteers to stand up and tell us what are the three S's that we talked about last week? I'll take the first hand up. Uh-oh, did Julia raise her hand? All right, go ahead. Come on, Julia. Yeah. Clap it up.
Soak yourself in God's presence, surround yourself with godly people, and surrender your life fully to Christ.
There it is. Yeah. Awesome. Brilliant. Way to go, Julia. All right. So she has a copy of, yeah, I know there's going to be one at the end, so you better pay attention, right? Yeah, Francis Chan's book, Crazy Love. So, Julie, if you don't have it, read it. If you do, give it away, okay? So, there will be one at the end, and there are more S's coming, okay? There's going to be four more. So, you're going to have to keep track of seven. And so, whoever wants to think about volunteering for that, right? So, Julia, thank you for reminding us of those three S's, right? There's what we talked about. Hey, that first S, soak, we want to soak our heart in God's word so that we have the fuel, right? So we could start a fire for seeing Jesus for who he really is. And then we want to surround ourselves with the community and people just like we're doing tonight. Man, I got so much air just sitting there for a few minutes with my friends, right? It's the air of community for our soul. And then if we surrender to the Spirit, he'll bring the heat and start a fire that he wants to take and show the world who Jesus is. And that's where we're going to go tonight. We're going to talk about what does it look like to make a disciple, okay, and to be making disciples as a way of life. So we need those three S's to get started. And yeah, you can go ahead, Paula. Yeah. So we want to anchor all of these thoughts. These aren't just my cool words, right? This is the Word of God, where we're reminded by Moses in Deuteronomy 8:3, right? Man does not live on just bread alone, but on every word from the mouth of God. And when we want to look for truth about surrounding ourselves, right, we can go here, surround yourself with God's people. Thank you again, Julia. We can go look in Hebrews where it tells us to not, what does it say? Not neglect to meet together as we're doing tonight. We could have all done a lot of other things tonight, right? So I commend every single one of you for being here and investing your time, right, so that we could encourage one another as the day draws near, right? And when we have things like hurricanes and all kind of crazy stuff, nuclear threats on the other side of the world going on, it can make you wonder, the day is drawing near because we're one day closer to eternity, right? One way or the other. And so when we have those three S's, that those means of grace, I would submit, are like a waterfall that God wants us to go stand under, right? And this is some kind of, take a picture. This is the Niagara Falls. Okay, this is how like God's helped me be reminded that I need His grace every day, and He's providing a means that's coming at you every day. It's roaring just like a waterfall, and He wants us to get and stand up under it. And it doesn't make any sense. I know I'm mixing my metaphors. Okay, that we're gonna take some water to start a fire, but that's how God works. It's kind of a backwards bicycle truth, right? He wants to pour grace into our lives and then light up a fire. All right, now. The first S we're going to talk about now is if we are standing up under that waterfall, okay, this is from John 17, okay? This is Jesus' prayer, okay? He said in part of that prayer, Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, may be with me where I am to see my glory that you have been given me because you have loved me before the foundation of the world. See, this is Jesus' purpose. He wants us to see who he really is, okay? And if we stand up under that waterfall, we give ourselves a chance to do that. And he's in charge of that. And here's how we know. There's a place in the Bible where it says, and we can go forward. In Matthew, okay, this is Jesus after he just told some parables, and the disciples are like, you know what? Why are you always talking in parables? Like, what's that all about? And this is what he says. He said, this is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing, they do not see. And hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. Now, is that just a little bit confusing on the surface to you guys? Does that sound like a little backwards bicycle truth? Like, what is he talking about? See, but they don't see. Okay, so there must be a couple types of seeing, right? And I would submit, clearly we all understand there's physical seeing, right? But I think there's another kind of seeing, okay? There's obviously physical seeing, but there must be another kind of seeing, and I would call it supernatural seeing with our heart eyes, okay? And there's lots of things that can get in the way of that, but I just want to show you this one example. Okay, see, you probably didn't see me this way before you saw these pictures. Maybe you did. Some of you have seen me before. And some people think I look like Derek Jeter, and some people think I look like Vladimir Putin. Okay, I'm not trying to look like those guys, okay? But now that you see it, you probably cannot unsee it. So, like, seeing, you didn't see, but now you see, okay? See what I'm saying? Right? I don't know. Like, and this is what I use to open my... I just started teaching, okay? So I'm a little kind of... I'm honestly kind of worn out, okay? I've had 3 days with some teenagers, and I love it, but it's tiring. And this is what I do on the first day. I'm going, okay, here's two pictures, okay? Which one do you think I look like? And we have a little vote. Right? And then we go, oh, you think I look like Jeter? Which one do you want me to look like? Smiling, or you want me to look like the other guy? So if you want me to be smiling, you just kind of follow along with what I'm asking you to do. Otherwise, I'm going to be shooting missiles in your backyard. Okay? And I'm not trying to take over the world like he is, but So there are occasions where you can see without seeing, but now you see, right? So, but there's some examples in the Bible, okay, that we need to look at that are a little more serious. Yeah. So let's go take a look at who knows the walk to Emmaus, the road to Emmaus story in the Bible, right? There's a couple ladies that are so distraught because they just, like, Jesus died, and they're like, where is he at? And they're walking back from the cave where he's supposed to have been buried, and then all of a sudden he decides to show up. Like, could you imagine that? He's like right there with you, and he decides to come up alongside him and take a little walk. And what does it say? While they were talking, discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. Now, that's kind of, I mean, if we all know who he is, that's a creator of the universe, about to have a little hike with you. And it says, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Okay, so then you go, who's in charge of that? Well, it must not be them, or else they would have seen him, right? And we have other examples, like Lydia, like we talked about last time, right? She was a worshiper of God, but she didn't see Jesus until God sent Paul, and Paul preached the gospel, and then what happened? The Lord opened her heart to pay attention to what was said by Paul. And what did he say? He was pointing her to Jesus. We know that because the text says he went there to preach the gospel. And then right after that, in the next verse, it says she went and got baptized along with her whole household. So she must have seen something different after the Lord opened her heart. And aren't you glad that he's the one in charge of that, right? He asked us to go soak and surround and surrender. And then we're going to talk about what it looks like to show and share. And then he's the one that's in charge of opening hearts, right? And we have another example, which is Paul himself. I know that's a lot of text, but just look up where it's bold and underlined. This is in Acts 9, the first 9 verses, okay, where Paul's headed off to Damascus. And a lot of us know this story, right? Here comes Jesus again. He shows up in person, and I am Jesus whom you are persecuted, because Paul's like, who is this guy, right? And then it says, the men who were traveling with him stood speechless, hearing the voices, but seeing no one. He was there, but they didn't see him. Now, Paul saw him, and it says Saul rose from the ground, and although his eyes were open, he saw nothing. So, what happened? So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus, and for 3 days he's without sight. But God just, I mean, the dude was, he was a terrorist. Okay? Like, Lydia was worshiping God, and then Paul shows up and reveals Jesus to him, and then here's a terrorist, and Jesus decides to show up and say, I'm going to turn you around in 3 days, and you're going to go become the greatest missionary that ever lived. Okay? Do we have that kind of faith in God that he can do that through us? He's not calling us to be Paul. Okay, he's calling you to be you. And he's putting you and me wherever he's putting us so we can go show and share Jesus with whoever he's putting across our path, okay? So I think we have, is that my last example? I think it is. So, no, this is the last one. You guys remember the guy that Jesus went and healed him from his blindness, okay? And then the Pharisees, those guys are everywhere. Like, they're always following Jesus around. And that just annoys me. Like, how come they didn't have anything else to do? Like, Jesus, everywhere he went, like, and the Pharisees had a question, right? And so then they bring this guy in. Jesus rescues the guy, and then the Pharisees are like, well, who's the guy? What happened? And he's like, well, I don't know. You know, whether he's a sinner, I don't know. One thing I do know, that I was blind and now I see, because Jesus caused him to see who he was, right? So could we all agree there's two kinds of seeing and that God's in charge of opening our hearts? So if we stand ourselves under those waterfalls of grace, he's gonna show up when he chooses. But then, hey, once he's called us to be his disciple, like, it's a fight, right? We got enemies. The world's out there yelling at us, saying, oh, it's disaster everywhere, right? Like, especially right now, racism like crazy, right? Or at least that's everybody wants to think that's the only thing going on. And then a hurricane shows up, and now we see there's some goodness in the world. I was reminded of that tonight at my table, right? But let me just ask y'all a question. Did anybody catch the eclipse last week? Like, in person? Nobody looked at it, like, straight up, right? Okay. Because then you wouldn't be able to see as well, right? But that whole experience, right, the moon was just cruising across in front of the sun, and we got to see part of the sun disappear, right? And so I think some of us, we all have moons to fight in our life, right? They're trying to block out the sun of God, who's trying to shine his light into our life. And I don't know whether that moon is loneliness or isolation or weariness and waiting for some longing in your life to be fulfilled, right? But just because the moon's in front of the sun doesn't mean it's not still shining, right? And we can trust that God is always there, whether it looks dark in our worst circumstances, our worst situation, the sun's still there, right? At a few minutes past 1:08, the sun started getting bigger, okay? Now, Hurricane Harvey's kind of an obvious example to look at right now, right? There may be some storm, right? Not a moon, but some storm in your life or in somebody else's life that you know about, okay? That God is looking for us to go be on a rescue mission, to get in the middle of it. Right, like my friend that I teach with, I got a text message last Wednesday night. He's like, I've been deployed to Hurricane Harvey. Went down there with 1,000 National Guard guys and 300 trucks. And then I saw him on the news. There he was, hauling babies out of the houses and grandmas on his back and with big old giant trucks. And he's sending us text message with pictures. And I'm like, man, that is so awesome. And I know we've all seen all those kind of stories, but we all have storms that come in our life. And whatever moon or storm has moved in the way of your seeing Jesus for who he is, he hasn't changed. He's not going to change, okay? And he won't change. So just because the moon moves in front of the sun doesn't mean the sun has stopped shining. And we must fight by putting on our safety glasses of truth and protect ourselves from the blinding darkness of lies and half-truths by returning to, again, soak our hearts in the word. Right? It's simple. The playbook is pretty simple. But man, you got to fight. Right? We got to fight. Did anybody want to not come here tonight? I mean, just be honest. I mean, I'm so glad you're here, please. But it could have been easy to just take a right and go into the house, right? And eat some Twinkies or something. Right? So, yeah, I'm glad I'm here. So here's the summary statement. All right? This is what Jesus wants for us. He wants to see him for who he is in all of his glory and goodness. And if you're taking notes, that's what's there for you on this first S. Yeah. Okay. So once he's caused us to see him, okay, seeing is, I would submit, not all he has for us. He wants us to savor him in our soul, right? He wants to see him for all he is so our soul can be filled up, okay? And I love Psalm 16:11. It's one of the verses that I think best expresses this idea of savoring, okay? It says, you make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. And so I have a question for you to ask yourself. Is your relationship with Jesus one like you could describe with the word savor, right? Because that when I hear savor, it makes me think of food, right? Maybe when you're enjoying an amazing meal, man, you're cooking or somebody else is cooking and you can smell it, right? Like on Friday, I'm going to cook some cinnamon rolls for one of my teams at one today. And man, that fills up the whole building. And people start walking in the door like, where's all that? Oh, it's your classroom where that cinnamon's coming from, right? And then I've had kids come up to me this week like, how was your summer? And I'm like, man, it was delicious. And they're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? It's delicious. Did you eat your summer? Right? Clearly you didn't. But there's something about savoring something in your soul that makes it feel like you're filling up with something that tastes good, right? And I think that's part of what David is saying in Psalm 34:7 when it says, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good, right? Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. I've always wrestled, and I think I'm still wrestling with that idea of taste and see. How does that make any sense? Like, when you taste, you're supposed to taste something. Not like, okay, I just ate a cookie. I didn't see anything different. But if you're tasting the Lord in your soul, you're going to see more of him, and you're going to start savoring him for exactly what. I just think this is another backwards bicycle truth, right? How do you see something because you tasted it? So savor Jesus as the treasure of your soul, right? Those are the two S's that I'm going to serve up, okay? And then we're gonna grab a couple more S's here in just a second, and I'm going to invite some of my friends up here to help us with that, okay? So if you guys would help me welcome, I'm going to invite my friend Steve and Jen and David and Michelle to come join us on the stage, and we're going to hear a couple of stories that will help us learn the last two S's. So yeah, clap it up. Thanks. Let's welcome them to the stage. Yeah. All right. Okay. So we're just going to hear from four of my good friends. And honestly, I could have invited probably any one of you up in the room here to share what God's been doing in your life. But we have some really special stories to share. And first, we're going to hear from my friend Steve, which, by the way, I just want to give him a hat tip because he's the engineer on this bike over here. He built this thing from scratch and invested a bunch of his time. So thank you very much. Okay. And we've spent some time praying lately and for quite a number of weeks now for someone that Steve has had a really first-hand chance to invest in and go live out his life as a disciple, loving somebody who doesn't know Jesus. And he's here to tell us a little about the story of Turtle.
Well, so this is this
on? Oh, that's my fault. We'll make it go on. There it is.
This is a kind of an unusual story. It's about a guy who has been a crack and heroin addict and living on the streets for close to 4 years. A friend of mine lives in Fort Worth, and he met this guy homeless and living on the street, and he was working on a house, so he put this guy in the house and thought that, maybe that would improve his situation. And every time he'd go to see him, he'd call me up, and we'd go together and talk to him and, you know, sit down. I'd talk to him and basically tell him he needed to really change his life. But, you know, he couldn't get past the drug problem, really. So then a friend of my buddy lent him his pickup truck to go get some fence materials. It turns out that he instantly went off on another crack and heroin binge and sold the truck for $300, even though it's worth, 100 times that. He had a Quick Trip one night and got more money for crack, and then came back without the truck. My buddy actually let him back into the house for a while. Then I met with him again. I got together with him again. We all sat down. We talked about life, talked about the Lord a little bit. Then he disappeared again, went off on another crack binge and heroin binge, and then this time actually stole a car and got arrested for that. And then he had two prior felonies, went into a maximum security detention facility, and his whole family had already disowned him years ago before that. So we were the only visitors. He'd been there 40 days. We were the only people to visit. And nobody returned a call. Nobody came to visit. But we went over, spent a couple hours in line, went to go see him, talk to him. And then I was stunned. There was a problem with the evidence, and the judge dismissed the case and let him go. So then we got together for dinner, and he cooked roast, which is like a big thing for him. And I was telling him, like, this is God's opportunity that you can change your life. You know, God set you free. We're going to be in prison for like 10 years, and now it's, you know, you've got 10 years of your life back. And we read John chapter 4 together. And then he told me he was going to change his life. And he was tired. He went off to bed. And I called my buddy the next morning. He said, like, hey, where's Turtle? And he said, well, he left. He grabbed up all his stuff and he left. And so he went off on another crack binge. And this one was far worse. Then he went off on this crack binge for like 3 or 4 weeks. And unfortunately had a major heart attack and was found like unresponsive on the street by the EMTs. And they apparently had a discussion amongst themselves whether they should even try to revive him, because he'd been out for so long that they were thinking he'd have major brain damage. But they did it anyway. They broke his sternum, broke a bunch of ribs, and he brought him back and put him in intensive care for 5 days. And then after 5 days, he called my friend again and told him basically he's going to be homeless. And my buddy's saying, like, you know, sorry, it's like, I'm not taking you in this time. And so then he called me and he said, basically, hey, you know, this guy's going to be back homeless again unless you go pick him up. And I told him I'd pray about it, and I prayed about it like as long as I possibly could. And then finally he went over there and signed him out and called me up and told me he did that. And so I drove over there and picked him up, and I was thinking, okay, well, I better get him out of Fort Worth because of all the drugs. And I took him to Hillsboro, which is about an hour south of there, and put him in a Motel 6, and I was thinking, okay, we could both sleep in the same room. But meanwhile, he's having all he's hallucinating like crazy. He's screaming and stuff, and it was like really hard to sleep through that. So I didn't get a whole lot of sleep. So then basically I decided I'd bring him up to McKinney. I've got a house up there, and I figured I'd put him there in the house because there's basically no drugs up there, and it'd be like really hard for him to get drugs, right? So I put him up there in the house and got him new clothes. And like the most important thing about the clothes was he wanted shirts that went past his elbow that wouldn't show all the needle marks on his arms. And I got him healthy food, only gave him healthy food. He couldn't take it. And after about 3 weeks, and I thought he was just going to die. I mean, the guy was like really in bad shape. And but I wouldn't give him cash. That was the thing. He really wanted cash, and he wanted like junk food. I was going to like not give it to him. But basically after like 3 weeks, he left and went off with a bunch of homeless guys, and amazingly found this place called the Samaritan Inn, and they let him into this drug treatment program. And then we'd go visit him there, and every week he'd get another one of these key fobs for another week being off crack and heroin. And he's been off of crack and heroin now for 14 weeks, which is pretty amazing. And we just had dinner with him, and he got a job working at a supermarket. And honestly, I could hardly recognize him. You know, he's like a different person. And he's like, you know, I think he's really actively just trying to pursue a faith. So it's kind of a strange story, but, you know, kind of a weird chapter in life. But it was fascinating to see, you know, how God could redeem this guy that, you know, we'd all just basically like entirely given up on.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah. Let's give him a hand, yeah.